Welcome back to Issues Etc. In this third hour, we're going to be talking with Jonathan Block and Joanna Shrewsbury. Joanna is a spokesperson for Mizzou Justice for All. Jonathan Block is the public affairs coordinator. They'll join us from Columbia, Missouri, out on the campus of the University of Missouri in Columbia. There was a pro-life exhibit that was displayed last week. Got some interesting reaction out there in Mizzou. We'll find out what this exhibit is all about and the reaction to it here in the third hour of Issues Etc. That's the first few minutes. Then open lines for your questions and your comments, something we didn't get to in the first hour of the program, and that is Judge Roy Moore having been turned aside by the U.S. Supreme Court. They refused to hear the case about the Ten Commandments monument. The monument was taken off to a room, an adjacent storage room. He says he's going to take his fight to the street. His lawyer says they're going to continue to fight, in his words, till hell freezes over. And then after hell freezes over, they said they'll continue to fight on the ice. We'll hear from them in open lines after we finish this conversation about a pro-life exhibit on the campus of the University of Missouri. Jonathan Block, welcome to Issues Etc.
Sir, it's good to be here. Good to be with you.
And Joanna Shrewsbury, welcome to you as well.
Thank you very much.
Tell us about the exhibit, Joanna, it's called Justice for All. What's the nature of this exhibit?
This exhibit is a photographic exhibit. It's about two stories high, and it just shows the development of young children in the womb and also the results of abortion. So it has very large and graphic pictures on there of the different stages of development and then all the different types of abortion that are performed on children.
Jonathan, make the case for us, if you would, for the graphic depiction and the public display of not only the stages of gestation after conception, but also the graphic results of surgical abortion.
Well, Todd, I'm an advertising major here at the University of Missouri, and one thing I've learned is that our culture is extremely visual. In order for people to understand something or to buy something, they have to see it first. And that form of thinking translates over to the abortion argument as well. In order for people to understand abortion and to realize its horror, they have to see it. And the truth is extremely painful. It's difficult to look at. Even for me, I've seen this exhibit now for hours on end, and it's still difficult to look at. But our culture is visually oriented, and we must see things in order to believe them.
Joanna, what are the main points or main arguments, if you will, that this Justice for All pro-life exhibit is attempting to get across to the person who would look at it?
The first thing that the Justice for All exhibit asks people to explore is, what is humanity and is this human? And basically, it just shows young developing children at all the different stages. And it's hard when you look at the pictures to say, you know what, that's not a human. And that is what this display was here for. That's why we brought it, to bring to light the humanity of the unborn. I think that pictures really succeed where words fail. It's hard to talk about abortion, and say, oh, well, you're killing a young child, you know. Well, no, it really is a child, you know. Trust me, it is. But when you see the pictures, it's hard to deny the humanity to the child.
The pictures bring, add an element to the argument and add an element of realism that words cannot.
Now, I also note that it does pose some, one might say, philosophical or ethical questions. One of the questions posed in one of the panels of the Justice for All exhibit is, what is it called when victims have no choice? And then, if I'm looking correctly here, some of the panels depict the results of other inhumane atrocities, such as the Holocaust or other inhumanities to man.
They do, and you know, that's been one of the most controversial elements of this exhibit. And Justice for All really regrets the need to reference other painful and violent eras in human history, we feel that it really gives abortion a good context. For instance, we can look at the Holocaust and see, okay, 6 million Jewish people were killed in the European Holocaust, and a total of 12 million Europeans were killed in the Holocaust. 30 million unborn Americans have been killed because of abortion. And so those genocidal eras are indeed very painful to look at and think about, but they help us place abortion in a very important context.
Joanna, do you find that when people see this display, in particular I'm thinking about the students at university campuses, when they see this, do they is this genuine information for them? In other words, have they been thinking about abortion in terms of kind of an abstract idea or an issue of rights and not in terms of the victims and its real results?
That's precisely how most university students think about it. And I believe that's because it's a very one-sided argument that's made on campuses. And most students do not see displays like this that really promote a different side of the abortion argument. I think that's really the great part of the exhibit, is that it grounds the abortion debate and takes it out of the kind of theoretical, is it a choice? Is it just tissue? What is it really? It really grounds the debate. We brought it because we can talk about abortion with what we call it as our common library. We have all the facts, all the stages of development of the children, all the different types of abortion right there for everyone to see. And so you can talk about abortion from a common reference, which is this exhibit, which the students, everything is documented. They can go online and look up all the studies and all the pictures and the stages of development. So we're really trying to engage them in a dialogue, and I felt it was very successful with the students.
Jonathan, tell us about the general reaction to this Justice for All display at Mizzou.
We were just astounded by the reaction. Students overwhelmingly responded to this exhibit. In fact, a commentary was just published today in our student newspaper. A female commentator in the paper said that she walked out of a building and looked at the exhibit, and she said when she saw the exhibit, she realized that the unborn are human and that abortion takes a human life, and that's the issue. And I think that's the realization that many students across the campus came to, that the unborn are human and that abortion takes a human life. And just as an example of that, of the success of the exhibit, our website has received twice as many hits after this exhibit than it has ever received before. 10,000 hits the website has received. We passed out over 1,000 miniature copies of the exhibit. And so students were very much intrigued by what they saw in the exhibit. They wanted to learn more. They wanted to find out more. And that's exactly why we brought it.
What kind of negative response did you receive, Jonathan?
We did receive some negative response, a bit from fellow students on campus. And actually, most of the negative response we received from fellow students was from students who clearly had not looked at the exhibit but had simply heard about it or maybe seen it from afar and been offended by what they'd seen from afar but hadn't taken the time to read it. And sadly, a lot of the negative response that we got was from the administration of the University of Missouri. We had quite a struggle getting the exhibit here, and then once it was here, we even had some legal issues with the University of Missouri. They were our real struggle.
And what was the rationale expressed by the administration to oppose this display?
You know, that's a good question. I don't really know. There wasn't much of a logical rationale, really, and certainly not a constitutional rationale whatsoever.
Now, this is a display that not only appears or has appeared at the University of Missouri in Columbia, Missouri, but elsewhere. What kind of scope does this Justice for All pro-life display have nationwide?
It's been all over. It's been to Baylor, UCLA, Texas A&M, University of Colorado, University of New Mexico. And so this is the first time ever in the state of Missouri, but it's been all over the nation.
Joanna, this is a very sad to note, but it is true. Among entering freshmen, women, at the average university, they're about 80% pro-life, or at least they poll about 80% pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
By the time they're done with 4 years of university and maybe a little graduate school, those numbers have completely reversed. They're about 80% pro-choice. What about this Justice for All display can help turn that sad statistic around?
I think that the Justice for All display can turn that statistic around because it really shows the humanity of the unborn. I think a lot of women come to college and just kind of instinctually feel that, but then the influences from professors, from upperclassmen kind of gets to them. And I don't want to say they weaken, but I think it's that the issue of humanity becomes more of a theory, you know, and the pictures, again, show the fact. I really think it's the influence probably from professors and such. I had one conversation with a professor on this university, which was actually the most aggressive debate that I had, where she kind of came up and attacked me for bringing this display and just wanted to do everything, personal attacks, religious attacks, anything but attacking the facts, which she really couldn't because they were all documented, you know, and just really heated and violently opposed to this display. And I think it's probably the influence from, you know, just from the university setting and from the idea, you know, that, well, you know, it's your private choice that really gets to the young women.
Before we wrap up our conversation, let's take a call from a listener in his car. Bill is on the line. Bill, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes, I remember having read some years ago, I don't recall where it was, it may have been National Geographic or something like that, that in the first few weeks of the development of a human embryo, it basically looks like an embryo of a frog or a turtle, that they're virtually indistinguishable. What would you say to someone who puts this argument forth?
Well, good question, Bill.
What I would say is, oh, go ahead.
Go right ahead.
Oh, okay. I would say that when something is small and forming, you know, it's hard probably to see distinctions at first. But one of the arguments that I've heard about the development of children and fish and chickens is that at one point, humans have gill slits on their throat, and this kind of proves that we all come from the same, you know, we all have the same kind of development as we're getting older. But the thing is that even in science classes, what they don't tell us is that the embryos never breathe through gill slits. They never survive off the fluids inside the embryonic sac. They're always getting their nutrients and everything from the mother. And so I've heard a lot of little, you know, like, oh, we're all really the same. But if you look down to it, there really are distinctions in the development between children and frogs and chickens and amphibians. They really are very distinct, even though we may all look like small forming tissue at once.
And fundamentally, Bill, we have each unborn human embryo has a distinct genetic pattern that shows it to be a human being, not a frog or a turtle or a chicken. Genetically, it is a completely distinct, unique human being that will eventually grow into a full, you know, an adult with unique visual characteristics that we could recognize. And simply because we can't recognize those characteristics does not mean that they're not human.
Jonathan Block, thank you very much for being our guest on Issues, Etc.
There, it was a pleasure.
Jonathan Block is Public Affairs Coordinator for Mizzou Justice for All, and Joanna Shrewsbury as well. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks for having us.
Joanna is spokesperson for Mizzou Justice for All. They have a website you can visit, and I would be remiss if I did not warn you that the display, the Justice for All display, is very graphic. It shows not only the developing embryo, it also shows the results of surgical abortion. It also compares that visually with other atrocities, so you might want to brace yourself. Here's the website, www.jfaweb.com. .org. That's JFAWEB.org. And I think at that website you will find the Justice for All pro-life display that was on display at the University of Missouri in Columbia last week. The remainder of the program today is open lines for your questions and your comments. There's a lot of stuff that I didn't get to in the first hour of the program. We'll bring it to you here in the remainder of the program. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. If you were listening but unable to respond in the first hour of Issues, Etc., if you'd like to react to the conversation we had with Pastor Will Whedon as we talked about the liturgy surrounding holy baptism in the second hour, or here's Judge Roy Moore. We'll be talking about him in just a few minutes. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. He has become the cause celeb for the Christian right. I think that's fair to say. But he has also garnered a fair amount of sympathy among those who would not call themselves the Christian right. I'll be quite honest with you, I have some sympathies for the ideas of Judge Roy Moore. I believe him to be a devout Christian. I believe that the display of the Ten Commandments is in the judge's chambers, as he first had it on his little hand-carved wooden plaque, is certainly innocuous. And I would even go so far as to say, for me, it's a toss-up on whether or not the Ten Commandments should be in the rotunda at the Alabama House of Justice. neither here nor there to me. The Ten Commandments to me are uniquely religious statements. And that line between church and state, at least to my way of thinking, would certainly allow for such a display. With all the caution that I would issue about remembering that the Ten Commandments aren't just words, they're not just a symbol, they are the word of God and of a particular God, not just the generic God of American civil religion. Now, with all that said, there still might be reason to take issue with the way that Judge Roy Moore has gone about making his case. The Supreme Court has refused to hear Judge Roy Moore's appeal of the federal court order that removed his multi-thousand-pound Ten Commandments monument from the Alabama State Judicial Building. Judge Roy Moore has been suspended for refusing to obey the order, and he faces a judicial ethics trial next week. Moore says that the Supreme Court hasn't heard the last of cases involving the Ten Commandments.
The United States Supreme Court may turn a deafening ear to the people of the state of Alabama, but they will not be able to avoid the thunderous roar that's going to be heard across this country, because we do not intend, as a people, to allow such an invaluable right to be taken from us.
Now, he's speaking there of this invaluable right, and that is, and this is a little fuzzy here, because everyone on both sides of this issue tends to play fast and loose with what exactly the issue is. Judge Roy Moore, a little later, we'll hear him talk about this being about acknowledging God. But he equates acknowledging God with a granite monument in the rotunda of the Alabama Judicial Building. All right? He says it's a fundamental right. We don't want to have it taken away from us. And the Supreme Court has not heard the end of the cases. Well, I think that goes without saying. Moore says that the fight, his particular fight, is far from over.
We do not intend to give up. We are only begun to fight. And that's exactly what the message to this people of this country need to hear. This battle's not over.
Now, there's more from Judge Moore here in just a moment, but I've got a couple questions right up front. I've asked one already. You can agree with Judge Moore in principle about the display of the Ten Commandments, that it is essentially an innocuous display reflecting the general milieu of our civil religion. God, as long as he's kept generic, is just fine with everybody. Even the Ten Commandments, as long as they're ascribed to that generic God. Don't tell me who he is, just this is good moral law to live by kind of a thing. You might agree with Judge Moore in principle, but many. Cal Thomas, Richard Land, Albert Mohler, and many others have come out and said, look, while we agree with him in principle, he's going about it in the wrong way. He is simply disobeying the law of the land, which is something the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of one of the states of the United States simply should not do. Now, Judge Roy Moore says that he doesn't have plans to run for office.
I plan on keeping the one I got, and I'll have to make that decision when that comes about. I mean, I don't know what I'll do in the future. Just like, do you know what you'd do if your job was taken away from you?
Maybe sure it could happen.
Would you run for public office?
Are you making a recommendation, sir?
Are you? I don't know what I will do. I do know that my job's very important. I'm the only breadwinner in the family, my wife and children basically depend upon me, so I'll have to get a job, I guess, if they take the job from me.
Oh, he's running for office, all right. I think you can guarantee he's running for office. This is kind of the tip. You know this is the way that it works. You know someone's running for office when they won't tell you they are. Oh, I don't know about that. I might not. Yeah, he's going to. You can count on it. The governor against whom he would run in Alabama, by the way, is the same governor who had the What Would Jesus tax. Do you remember this? The personal income tax, something along those lines in the state of Alabama, was lopsided. The governor there had a university professor who did a study of the tax system in Alabama and said, look, this is lopsided against the poor in Alabama, and we need to invent, essentially, the tax structure in Alabama, and it led to, and he recommended this, the judge did, recommended a 12% tax increase in Alabama. And he made his arguments, based upon the research of the person he had hired to do this, that this is what Jesus would do. This is what Jesus would tax in Alabama. Does anybody remember what happened to that? In this Christian state that displays the Ten Commandments, they're all about God. They didn't want to tax the way Jesus would tax. It went down in a resounding defeat. That would be a fun race to watch. The what would Jesus tax governor against the Judge Roy Moore governor wannabe. That would be fun to watch. Certainly, I think we'll probably be seeing that or some other run for public office. I mean, anyone advising Judge Roy Moore at this point in terms of politics would say, you have political capital, don't waste it, and don't let it sit and get stale. The big question mark is, will he keep his job? Because next week he's up on an ethics violation precisely because he has refused to obey the court order, the federal court order, to remove the monument. Our call-in numbers, by the way, during this remainder of Issues Etc. here, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Do you agree with Judge Roy Moore in principle, but do you think he ought to be removed from office next week because he's violated the federal court order? He's appealing to the Supreme Court. He wants the federal courts to answer this question, but he refuses, and he chides the Supreme Court for not taking his appeal, but he refuses to listen to the federal courts when it comes to the removal of the monument. And he's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the state of Alabama. Now, Moore's attorney is named Terry Butts. He says that he's ready to defend Moore at next week's judicial hearing.
Come November the 12th, we will continue to defend and fight for the chief until hell freezes over. And when hell freezes over, we'll fight him on the ice.
All right. Now, they're ready to go. And they obviously feel like they have some kind of, although I don't know what you can do, this judicial review, I do not know whether or not this can be appealed. I haven't looked into that. But whether it can be appealed or not, they're ready to fight it. Now, Moore says that displaying the Ten Commandments on public property isn't unconstitutional.
Some think that's a violation of separation of church and state to acknowledge God. But indeed, the acknowledgement of God is the basis for the separate jurisdictions of church and state. It comes down through history right from the Bible that when you talk about separation of church and state, you must acknowledge God.
All right, he's got a point. He does have a point here. The point is, and here I think he probably sounds more Lutheran than he intends to sound, God's word does distinguish between the church and the state. Read Romans 13. It identifies the state as an institution of God separate from that institution that is the church. So God's word does recognize a distinction between church and state. And Moore says, you know, if you argue for the separation of church and state, and by quite honestly, I think this is the first time I've ever heard him argue for it, but he is, then it is implicit in the separation of church and state that you acknowledge God. He's trying to arrive at the end by a different means. Rather than saying separation of church and state doesn't exist, he's saying separation of church and state requires you logically to acknowledge God. But he's making a jump of logic there, don't you think? Because he says, and that acknowledgement of God requires the display of the Ten Commandments. We'll be right back.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener supported. That means we rely on you to pay the production salaries and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to prayerfully consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You can donate by credit card, 1-800-737-0172. Or you can donate by check, Issues, etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues, etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues, etc.
Genesis or evolution, the science is the same. Answers with Ken Ham, author of the free booklet, What Really Happened to the Dinosaurs? Well, wait a minute, Ken. How can you claim that those who believe in the book of Genesis have the same science as those who believe in evolution?
I was on a radio debate recently with an evolutionist. He told me that because I believed in the book of Genesis, I therefore took a religious view of origins. But because he believed in evolution, well, he had the scientific view. I responded by saying, really, I have the same science you do, and I don't disagree with your science. I could tell he was perplexed, so I continued, you believe in the science of genetics, and so do I. You believe in the science of natural selection, and so do I. In fact, we all have the same science because we live in the same world. I then went on to tell him that the argument between creation and evolution ultimately wasn't a controversy about real science, but an argument about what we believe concerning history. But I also added that the real science of genetics, natural selection, and so on actually confirmed the Bible's history to be true. Creationists and evolutionists have the same science, but different beliefs about the past.
Creationists use the same evidence as the evolutionists, but show that dinosaurs died out relatively recently, not 65 million years ago. For more answers to this intriguing topic of dinosaurs, read Ken Ham's free booklet, What Really Happened to the Dinosaurs, on our website, answersradio.com.
We'll continue with our discussion on Judge Roy Moore when Issues, Etc. continues, coming up here in about a minute and a half. AM850K FUO weather, rain tonight, overnight low of 42, mostly cloudy tomorrow, 55 for the high. It's cloudy in St. Louis, 72 in St. Louis. And northbound 270 between Page Avenue and Dorset, slow, mostly in the right lanes, exiting onto 70. Westbound 70 between Cypress and St. Charles Rock Road, slow. Also on westbound 70 between 270 and Zumble, heavy traffic. Westbound 40 between Boone Bridge and Route K, slow traffic. Westbound 70 right before Bryan Road, there's an accident and the right lane is blocked. And the ramp is also closed. The accident involves an overturned truck. Eastbound 40 between Jefferson and the Poplar Street Bridge, slow traffic. And northbound 55 between Park Avenue and the Poplar Street Bridge, slow traffic in the right lane.
Holy Cross Lutheran Church in St. Louis is the AM 850 KFUO Church of the Week. Holy Cross is a historic Lutheran community bringing the gospel to the 21st century. On Sunday, November 9th, the congregation of Holy Cross will celebrate 145 years of Christ-centered ministry with a service of praise and thanksgiving. The service is at 10 a.m. The church is located at 2650 Miami Street in South St. Louis. The members of Holy Cross are inviting all to participate in this joyous celebration.
Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., the Magna Carta of the Reformation. It's the Augsburg Confession. We'll be talking about that foundational document, not only foundational for Lutherans, but also foundational for many other branches of the Reformation who either took the entire Augsburg Confession as part of their personal confessions, but or borrowed heavily from the Augsburg Confession. Dr. Martin Nolan of the Concordia Historical Institute will be our guest tomorrow on Issues, Etc. to talk about the Augsburg Confession. It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. We're talking about Judge Roy Moore. 25 minutes left in this hour. If you're going to call, now is the time to do it. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Before the break, I asked whether or not a Ten Commandments display, the nature of which is at issue here in the Judge Roy Moore case, is the same thing as acknowledging God. Now let's hear one more time from Alabama Supreme Court Justice Judge Roy Moore. He says that Alabama is entitled to freedoms that President Bush himself says come from God.
I certainly find it strange that on the very day the President of the United States visits Birmingham and says that liberty and freedom is a valuable right given by the Creator God, by the Almighty, I believe was his words, and yet the Chief Justice of Alabama can't acknowledge God.
Now, again, he has equated the display of the commandments in the form that he had it with acknowledging God. He has equated those two things. In order to acknowledge God, he must be allowed to display the commandments in the manner that he had displayed them with this granite monument. And he finds it ironic, who could blame him, that George W. Bush visiting Alabama would say, yeah, God gave us these freedoms. So there's one question. Is acknowledging God in the public square, does it require the display of the Ten Commandments in the fashion that Judge Roy Moore has called for and has been willing to disobey a federal court to keep up? Should he be removed because of his disobedience to the federal court order, even while he seeks that the Supreme Court, another federal court, would hear his case? Should he be removed next week during that ethical hearing? And here's a question that was raised by a previous guest when we talked about this last with Dr. David Adams. Has Judge Roy Moore, in effect, made himself the issue? And in doing so, has he actually worked against his own cause and armed the opponents of religious expression? Those questions are for you. I'd like your answers. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up first, calling from her car, Kathy is on the line. Kathy, welcome.
Yes, Todd. I think Roy Moore is a hero. He's a Daniel. And I believe he will run for office. I believe for such a time as this that God has him. And as far as I am concerned, the Ten Commandments is not religious. The Ten Commandments is the lawgiver. God is the lawgiver. He is the lawgiver of all mankind. And therefore, I think Lutherans have to get some reality here and open up and realize that this is what God is doing. This is a God thing. And we're about ready to battle Satan like never before. And I believe that the Lord's coming soon because he's going to hear us calling out, we want justice.
So you would equate the display of the Ten Commandments with acknowledging God?
We better acknowledge God. Any nation that doesn't will be judged.
All right. Thank you very much, mm-hmm. Kathy. I find it a little difficult to understand. Maybe I'm just thick. I find it difficult to understand that this would be a God thing when most of the people who are arguing for the display of the Ten Commandments are very clear that this has nothing to do with any particular God. So it must be God in the most generic sense of the term. Because, I mean, I've read a lot of the proponents of the display of the Ten Commandments, and I sympathize with much of their reasoning, but what they always end up saying is, look, the Ten Commandments don't talk about any specific God. It's just the generic God of American civil religion, the kind of God that everyone can agree on. So what's the big deal? Now, that's where I take issue. I think the Ten Commandments are the word of a specific God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And he doesn't particularly care for being, he doesn't care to be equated with some sort of generic, empty, nameless God. He's pretty specific about who he is. And to say that the Ten Commandments are, as many have said, the Ten Commandments are just kind of general religious expression or general American civil religion, at least to my way of thinking, completely empties the Word of God of all of its import. Rich is calling from St. Louis. Rich, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hey, Pastor Todd, I'm probably missing something on this as to what the purpose, what his real purpose was for leaving the Ten Commandments. But yeah, when I look at the Ten Commandments, I kind of think, aren't they for believers? Because it tells me of my sin, and it drives me to Jesus. And if there's a monument, and I'm not saying one way or the other, take it out or leave it, but if there's a monument there that says, thou shalt not, and you read that, and then, okay, I'll try to not do that. And then where's the gospel in that? Where's the after the law, where's the gospel?
Thank you very much, Rich. It's an excellent question. One of our listeners once said, I don't mind them displaying, I don't remember who this was, but they called in and they said, I don't mind them displaying the Ten Commandments in a statue, as long as they got Jesus standing on top of them, the keeper of the Ten Commandments, the one who has silenced the accusations of the law against sinners by his perfect obedience to those commandments. But you know, the interesting thing is, as I mentioned before, playing fast and loose with the real issue here, there are Christians who are more than willing to say the Ten Commandments have nothing to do with Jesus for the sake of getting them displayed. I don't know. I don't think the Bible ever says that the Ten Commandments have nothing to do with Jesus. I think Jesus was very earnest that he was all about keeping the commandments on our behalf and about coming to save those who can't keep them. 505-750-1800-730-2727. Andy's calling from Kirkwood. Andy, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. I think that perhaps the justice, if he wants to proclaim what he believes, maybe ought to go and do what that general's been doing, ought to go and speak in churches rather than trying to drag the church into his state hall. And the problem that I'm having with him is that the scriptures say whoever breaks one law is a lawbreaker, and it would appear that in resisting the higher court that told him to move the monument, that he is a lawbreaker. And then you have to ask, well, is he fit then to be the chief representative of the law in Alabama? Oh, that's a question.
That's a question they'll be taking up next week.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I probably have missed this. You probably talked about it already. How is the Chief Justice in Alabama chosen? Is he elected?
That's a good question. To the best of my recollection, I think he is elected.
If he is, if Alabamians disagree with the idea of removing him from office, they can put him right back where they want him. And it would be a temporary thing. It seems to me there should at least be a censure on that. The one question, and perhaps you have addressed this, and I've managed not to be around when you've done it, is what else is on that display? Because it seems to me that there's probably something more there than just the Ten Commandments and an additional reason for having it on display rather than to just display the commandments, and I'll hang up and listen.
All right, thank you very much. Now, the picture that I have of this Ten Commandment monument that was taken before it was removed, The Ten Commandments sit atop this thing, kind of like two tablets rising out of a general granite background. The Ten Commandments are carved in there. And then below on the sides of the monument, there are some statements, and I'm not sure that all of them are the same. And then there appears also to be some engraving, some writing around the perimeter of this monument. Now, I will tell you how the monument got into the building. It got into the building late one night after the doors were locked. It was commissioned. I don't know who paid for it, but the monument was put there by, and at the behest of, Judge Roy Moore. He put it there himself. He did not seek the permission of his fellow justices, nor of anyone else. He exercised what he believed to be his prerogative as Chief Justice of the state of Alabama and simply put it in. Oh, our time runs short, doesn't it? We've only got 30 seconds here. You know, everyone believes in church and state and the separation between church and state. It's just the degree to which you believe they ought to be separate. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.